How many of you have noted that there's politics in the news? Anybody notice that? I think we all have. And I believe we spend a little bit of time, maybe an abnormal amount of time, with what's happening in politics. I think sometimes we are frustrated with what is going on. At other times, we're not frustrated at all because we realize this is the way it was supposed to be. So since we have a Republican, they have a Republican convention coming up on Monday, I believe it is, and I guess a vice president is going to be named in the next few days also, maybe on Monday. I thought it would be good to take a look at what God says. Basically, what I called this sermon was, how does God run elections? How does God run elections? Because really, when we take a look at what's happening in the United States and in around the world, in fact, we realize that God is very much involved, and he is the one that runs elections. He is the one that guides what is going on. It's something that we really need to remember, because if we don't remember the input God has, and that's putting it lightly, the control God has in elections around the world, then we're going to not have peace of mind. What's coming up with the elections can cause a person to go stir crazy. In the world, the Republicans are doing that, the Democrats are doing that, but God doesn't want us to be involved in politics. We see what's going on around us, but we still need to know how much God is involved, what he says about who is eventually in an office. Let's go back to 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 7. We won't spend a lot of time there, but it's a reminder of what happened in the very beginning, 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 7. And when we read this, we realize that even when God was the one that was worshipped in the Old Testament, when God was the one who was their king, because we know that when the Israelites rejected Samuel, that they rejected God. So 1 Samuel 8 and verse 7. 1 Samuel 8 and verse 7. It came to pass when Samuel was old. In the ESV it says when Samuel retired. I thought that was interesting. But I don't think prophets retired. This is 1 Samuel 8 and verse 7. In the sense that we retire now. But we do know that in another sense, they stopped being a prophet, kind of. Sometimes God brought them back in. But anyway, we see here that the judges became the sons of Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 8. And we're starting out in verse 1 here. The name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second, so this is verse 2, was Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain. They looked for bribes. They perverted justice. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, "Look, you're old. Your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us king, a king to judge us like all other nations." What we see in this is in verse 6, the thing displeased Samuel because he felt rejected. They were rejected his choice of judges, his sons. But God then said, look, heed their ways, but realize also they have not rejected you, they have rejected me. Verse 7, that I should not reign over them. Then it goes on to say in chapter 8 that there are going to be problems. You are going to have to serve this king. He is going to demand you to go to war. He is going to take the best of your flocks, your herds, your land, he warned them that it's not going to be good. The desire to have a king was going to turn out to be a curse. And absolutely, that's what's happened. So when we look at a nation, Israel, we are Israel. When we look at Great Britain, when we look at the sons of Jacob, who have countries now, there is a country for each one of them. We can do a study on that. We know quite a few of the countries that came out of the loins of Jacob. We see that not all is going well. There are problems. God did bless the Israelites. He promised a blessing, but because they rejected him, and they did, and they are still doing that, there's going to be problems. So when it comes to us in the United States, we should not be surprised that there are problems in politics, that there are problems with conventions, that there are problems with fighting between one man and another man. We shouldn't be surprised with the news that we hear. If we center our lives around the news, we are going to be frustrated. The more we center our lives around what's happening in politics, the more frustrated we are going to be. We absolutely will not have peace of mind. Now, I do follow what's going on. After all, I did know that there's going to be a Republican convention this coming Monday. And I don't know that the Democrats are going to have their convention on August the 19th. That's how much I'm not involved. So I do know what's happening. There's no problem with that. And it's actually good to see what is going on so we can remember what God said. But let's see how much God is involved. I'm not going to use a lot of scriptures. One or two can tell us what would happen. We want to take a look at right now the involvement of God. How much really is God involved? Is it true that when there is a man that's placed, promoted in an office, president in the United States, and even vice president, because there's a lot about vice presidents right now, and we know that what was the show, that TV show by President Trump, was it The Apprentice, was that it? Something like that. Anyway, he recently said, and I did see the top of the news, so to speak, that there are four possible candidates. And I think they named them. I could name a couple of them, I'm sure, and so could you. So we know what's going on, but how much is God involved? And is the choosing of a vice president important? Is God involved in that? And I think we'll see from this scripture here that pretty much, pretty detailed, he is. Let's go to Daniel 4, verse 25, and then I want to give you some examples of what's happened in American politics through the years to show us how much God truly is involved. Ezekiel, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, we do see that Nebuchadnezzar was pretty high-minded. Daniel was working for him, and God used Daniel to send some messages to Nebuchadnezzar. But we know that Nebuchadnezzar was prancing around, and he was looking at what he had done, all of his wonderful empire, what he had produced, what he felt that he was totally responsible for. But we come to verse 24, when Daniel was told, you know, this king has a problem, you need to send a message to him. And so Daniel, by the way, was very wise. He said, let this message be those from your enemies, because it wasn't going to be a good message. Notice in verse 25, this is the decree, by the way, verse 24 of the Most High. They shall drive you from men, your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you until you know what? Until you understand, until you fully know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he chooses. So with presidential elections, I remember the first one that I really was involved with closely was when our history teacher, her name was Crockett, and her son's name was Davy. So Davy Crockett, we'll never forget that. But we went over to Mrs. Crockett, our history teacher's house, with the debate between Richard Nixon and Jack Kennedy, John Kennedy. And that's the one, and I think we were at her house when the election night, we stayed up until 12 or 1 in the morning at her house to see who was going to be elected. And that was my first, well, I still remember, I Like Ike, some of those little, well, sayings that they had pasted all over or, you know, on the, probably the side of his bus. Make America Great is the one we know with President Trump. I Like Ike is the one that we saw when I was, well, that was in 1952. I believe it was, and then he became president in 1953, all the way up for 8 years until Jack Kennedy, John Kennedy, was elected president in 1960. But we take a look at then, and we ask ourselves, and I would ask if my mother and father, my mother based her vote on how handsome the president was. I do remember that. And better yet, if the president's wife, the potential president's wife, was a really solid-looking, wonderful, well-dressed, makeup proper, and hair proper, then she would vote for them. I do remember that. My parents were Democrats, but I never knew it because they voted for President Eisenhower. And I think maybe we remember that both the Democrats and Republicans wanted a General Eisenhower to run on their platform. But anyway, what we see here is he's very much involved. God was involved with Ike Eisenhower being elected, with John Kennedy being elected, with Jimmy Carter being elected, with, and you can name the presidents of the United States. There have been 45 presidents of the United States, 45 administrations. God has been involved, and if we find ourselves complaining, we have to remember, oops, that's God's choice. Always remember, that's God's choice. We should never wake up the following morning after an election and start pulling our hair out because of what's happened. We should be praising God that certainly what he says comes true. He is the one who chooses the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States. You can see by some of the examples throughout history. And verse 32, by the way, says the same thing, that we have to know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. That is either true or it is sometimes he does this and sometimes he doesn't. He always does it. With Gentile kingdoms, he does it. Not just with the sons of Jacob, Israelite kingdoms. He does it with Gentile kingdoms. Now think of Cyrus, for example, later on. He named the name of Cyrus before Cyrus was born. And he put him in that office. All of a sudden, we have a mic. Did you hear before? I'm going to start the sermon over because I know you couldn't hear any of this. I'm kidding. God is the one that just is totally involved. So we're going to take a look, and by the way, verse 35, we can read that also, where God says, all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven. Among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? How many of us have done that? Well, we haven't done that to God because we forget that God is the one who does it. But no one can say, what have you done? We want to make sure we don't get emotionally involved. Now, you can get emotionally involved in a football game if you want. when the San Francisco 49ers lose or win, or the Broncos win or lose. But even then, that's wrong, isn't it? We don't get so emotionally involved is fine. It's when we get depressed, that's a problem, when we get depressed. Because you can get emotional, you can get excited about something, tennis match, track and field. The Olympics is coming up, and I always like to watch, many of us like to watch, gymnastics is great. Skating events are fine, swimming events are fine, track and field. We get involved in that, but when we get to the point that we are depressed and emotionally distraught over what's going on, we have forgotten that God, and I'm not talking about the Olympics now, but when in politics this happens, we have forgotten that God places in office whomever he chooses. We just have to separate ourselves from the world. We're not in the world. We're in the world, but not of the world, better yet. But we've got to make sure that we understand that. The 1840 election of William Henry Harrison was quite an election. Martin Van Buren was the president before William Henry Harrison. Van Buren ran again, but what happened in his tenure, the 4 years that he was president, was the panic of 1837. If I say 19, go back 100 years. 1837, the panic of 1837. It was the greatest financial depression that had ever hit the United States. Now, you know what happens when a president is in office and the economy is not good. They're not going to be elected. President Bush, the first President Bush, lost the election, and they said there were three reasons that he lost the election. The economy was the first, the economy was the second, and the economy was the third. And I still remember. So if you have a depression and people lose money and things aren't going well in the economy, the president is not going to be elected. But it was the panic of 1837. The election of 1840 was referred to as the Revolution of 1840. How many of you remember the statement, Tippecanoe and Tyler too? I remember that from, I think, my history teacher. She wanted us to know American history. But I do remember that. Well, as you know, Tyler became the president later on. Why did he become the president? Because something happened to Harrison, William Henry Harrison, that caused him to be in office for the shortest period of time of any president who's ever become president in the United States. But anyway, we ask the question, when I see what happened here, why did God put John Tyler in office? They called him Mr. Accident. He's the first vice president to ever be the president. I mean, under a serving president. What you had vice presidents that would later on be president if they ran for office. But he was called Mr. Accident because William Henry Harrison died. But I asked myself the question when I take a look at these things, and the answer that I got when looking it up was there was a problem with the checks and balances in the United States, also a problem with the federal bank, and also the small branches of banks that were around the United States. Each branch decided the loans they could make and even the value of money, because back then there was a gold and silver standard, and some branches would say, well, the gold is worth $100 an ounce. Others maybe could say $75 an ounce. So there wasn't a standardized throughout the United States. That was a problem. There had to be a federal system that would be set up. And Andrew Jackson, I think, partially was responsible for a federal system, but Tyler was the one who really cemented it in. But the the other problem you had is that there weren't checks and balances between Congress, the Supreme Court, and the presidency, the office of the president. And so what they called it was inner branch checks and balances. You didn't have any of that. And because John Tyler was the president, now that was established. It was very important. Harrison died because he gave a very long inaugural speech. It was 2 hours long. He didn't wear a hat. He didn't wear gloves. He didn't wear a coat. He was a general, after all. And he came down with pneumonia within a few days and died having served only 32 days as president. He had the shortest period of time. So we take a look, and again, we're asking, why did God do this? I take a look at what was happening in the previous presidency and what was happening with the man who became president, and you can pretty well come up with the reasons why God did what he did. And just to establish a common price for silver, or United States value on silver and gold, very important, and to have those checks and balances were very important. Okay, so was God involved? A president who served 32 days. Now, there was all of the corruption and wrongdoing that was being accused by both parties. So it was not unlike today, where there's accusations going back and forth. It was the same thing. In fact, there were periods of time when the politicians were so upset at each other that they were in fights and they threw each other out the window. They would fight in Congress. So if we think, you know, that we have problems, it's like, no, there's nothing new under the sun. They're all pretty carnal. It's happened before, happened again. I don't know if actually there was a period of time, I forget which president, may have been Andrew Jackson, where the public came in and basically took over the White House. Just came in, they were really celebrating a little bit too much. I don't think they ever came into Congress and did what happened back in January 6th of 4 years ago. Okay, let's go to the 1880 election of James Garfield. Have you ever heard of a president that was elected who never ran for office? Well, in the 1880 Republican Convention, delegates chose Garfield because the men that were running for office, there were three of them, including Ulysses Grant, who was president two terms. Well, it was Lincoln, Andrew Johnson, and then Ulysses S. Grant, who served for 8 years, and then Rutherford Hayes, then William Taft after that. But you come to 1880, and there were three men that wanted to be president, and Grant wanted to be president again. There was one vote. This is at the Republican Convention. There was a vote, and nobody was chosen for the Republican presidency. The second one, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and no one was chosen. 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, nobody is chosen. 21, 22, 23, 25, 29, 30, 32, 34, 35 times they tried to put a man with the majority of votes as their guy for the president. Didn't happen. 35 times. They chose a dark horse. His name was James Garfield. He didn't even have his hat in the ring, I guess they call. Can you imagine that happening today, where you have the Republican convention coming up and nobody, and of course some of the rules have changed, but nobody is there, and they go a few days trying to find a president. So we had then, and why do I bring up James Garfield? Well, because he also died. He also died, but he was elected. Now, I ask the question, why in the world would God want James Garfield to be in office? And basically, what you find, let me give you percentages, by the way, when he ran against Scott, of who won. Garfield won with 48.32% of the vote. Scott won with 48.21% of the vote, less than 1,800 votes out of 9 million votes cast. Well, I would say, if I woke up in the morning, I would say the Republicans, they cheated. That's what I would say. Wouldn't you complain? So if we were living at that time and we were in the church, would we complain? And the answer is, well, there wouldn't be too many people in the United States going to Sabbath services, I suppose, at that time. There would be, well, 1880, there was a establishment here in the Denver area, wasn't there? The Church of God, Seventh Day, I believe that would be 1880. But were they involved in politics? And if so, were they complaining? Would we complain? If I were watching what was going on in the elections, I would say, something is dirty in Denmark, or whatever that statement is. Because it's like, well, that's way too close, and there had to be people who had prison votes. And the answer is, no, it wasn't until Benjamin Harrison that Benjamin Harrison got in because of prison votes. It wasn't until Jack Kennedy that Jack Kennedy got in office because of cemetery votes. Remember? That's the way it is. But if God puts a man in office, even when you look at something that maybe there's cheating involved in it, does God put the man in office? Have we ever heard of a lying spirit? And the answer is 1 Samuel 22. You have the time when the king of Israel comes down with, or the king of Judah comes down to talk to the king of Israel, because the king of Israel is complaining about Syria having a piece of property, a large piece of property that he said we own. And he said, can you join me in battle? The two kings talking. Can you join me in battle and help me get this territory back? And the king of Judah said, well, yeah, but he said, I want to know what the prophets say first before I get involved in this. And so the king of Israel said, well, I've got 400 prophets, and let's see what they say. So 400 prophets come down, and one guy takes the horn of a bull or whatever it was, and he prances around, and he says, God says that we are going to win if we go against Syria. And the king of Israel says to the king of Judah, will that do it for you? And he said, are those the only prophets you have? And the king of Israel says, you know, there is a prophet, but I don't like him because he never prophets the way I want him to prophesize. And so a messenger goes to the prophet that is an honest prophet, and says, now, you know, all the other prophets have prophesied this way. We want you to prophesy this way too. So comes and, okay, the king of Israel said, what's going to happen to us if we go to war against Syria? And the prophet says, oh, you're going to win. God says you're going to win. And the king of Israel said, you know, you're lying. You never do this. You're never on my side. What is really going to happen? And the king of Israel says, the prophet says, well, what I saw in the heavens in a vision was God was calling on people, if they will go down and influence you to go to war with Syria. And there was a volunteer of one of the, who would it be? One of the angels. And the angel said, I'll go down as a lying spirit, and I will convince the king of Israel to go to war against Syria. And I think they put the guy in prison, but it was a lying spirit that was used by God. God used a lying spirit. Does God ever use a lying spirit to get his way? And the answer is, yeah. If he did once, he can do it twice. So are elections ever fixed? Oh, it couldn't be. Politicians are always honest. That's an oxymoron, I think. Honest politician, isn't it? And I think there are some that really are serious when they go to Congress to really try to get something done. So God's going to, the expression is by hook or by crook, get his way. He can do that. And he did. So what you have with John Garfield was in office for 6 months. God put him there. He was in office from May 4th to September 9th of 1881. And he's at a railroad station. A man walks up behind him with a 44 pistol, 44 caliber we call it, pistol, and shoots him twice in the back. He lives for a while, of course, but he dies of infection. They can't find the bullet. It's happened with a couple of the presidents where they couldn't find the bullet, and the man dies. Chester Arthur is now the next president for 4 years. And I asked the question, why did God place Chester Arthur in office? And here's what I found out. The presidential office had been emasculated under Johnson, disgraced under Grant, and in the disputed election of 1876, it had been further tainted by cheating, haggling, and secret deals between the Republicans and Democrat bosses. That Arthur was able to assert any prerogative at all, even negatively by veto, or taking the power into his own hands, taking authority into his own hands, says was a small foretaste of a better future for the presidency. So haggling, cheating, emasculating the office of the presidency would have continued. And Chester Arthur changed all of that. I think it was Chester Arthur where they said he looked presidential. You can take a look at his picture and you can see what he looked like. Okay, so let's take a look then finally at the election of 1900. William McKinley was president before this. This was in 1897 to 1901. All elections take place in an even year. All of the presidents start, unless there is a death of the previous president, but new presidents always start in an odd year. So you have then the election of 1900. William McKinley is running again, and he will then win the election and start in 1901. But about a year before he ran for office in 1900 for the second time, the vice president, Garrett Hobart, had died. He had some heart problems. And so they had to choose a new vice president. And what were they going to do? Well, there was this Republican who was the governor of New York. His name was Teddy Roosevelt. And he was pro-business, and he was anti-big corporations. And so in New York as governor, he was already taxing the corporate entities and causing problems. And they said, and I'll read it to you, as to why he was chosen. Here it says, Theodore Roosevelt was actually chosen by William McKinley's running mate, for William McKinley's running mate. And who was he chosen by? There was a guy named Rockefeller, there was a guy named Carnegie, and there was a guy named Morgan. The president of the United States was not the most powerful person in the United States. Those three men were the most powerful men in the United States. They were the ones when, they knew what was going on with Teddy Roosevelt, New York. He was after these corporations to break them apart because they were entities that controlled. It'd be like AT&T years ago. You had no other telephone company. And so Teddy Roosevelt is the one that comes in. Oil was totally controlled by Rockefeller. The steel industry was totally controlled by Carnegie. He was the one that came up with the Bessemer, B-E-S-S-E-M-E-R, I believe, way of producing steel. So he was good. He was a poor Scotsman. He desired most of all, this is Dale Carnegie, to make more money than Rockefeller. That was his whole goal. And I think he did for a period of time. But whatever the case, Teddy Roosevelt then was chosen. If we can make him vice president, vice presidents do nothing. They have no control over anything. We, the trio, said will be safe. There won't be an attack on these corporations. We will be still very strong. And so William McKinley is voted in and lives about 6 months. And the guy they didn't want to have any power, Teddy Roosevelt, becomes a president. And next thing you know, these guys are in court. I remember seeing a documentary of Rockefeller being in court. And by the way, what Rockefeller did when everything broke up and all these companies, he gained what bought stock in all of those companies. He made more money actually when everything was broken up than he did when he owned everything. It's interesting when you read all of this. So what do we have then? God involved? Or did God want these guys? God used Rockefeller. He used Morgan, definitely. He used it to the advantage of the United States. There's no question about that, but there was a time for a change. He wasn't going to have individuals with money controlling the presidency of the United States. I think it still happens. I do, you know, didn't under Teddy Roosevelt, but given enough time, you have those problems that come back. But God wanted to bless America in 1900. He didn't want America to be cursed. So God was going to do everything he could to fulfill the promise that he made, that he would, you know, end the curse in the early 1800s of of the Israelites because of sin. They went into a long, long time of being cursed. Gentiles were basically in power up until the early 1900s. And then God blessed America, Great Britain, and the other Israelitish countries. So we see all that happening, and we ask ourselves, is it good that God's in control? And the answer is, yeah, it's good that God's in control. God's able to bless us or curse us, whatever he desires. But as he said, until you know the Most High rules and the power of on this earth. Until you know the Most High rules. So what do we do? Well, 1 Timothy 2, verses 1 and 2. Let's go there. There's many other scriptures we could go to showing where God knows the end from the beginning, and then he accomplishes what he knows the end should be. He knows. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, I exhort, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. Now, this is the Apostle Paul talking to Timothy somewhere, probably in the 60s AD. And he appealed to Caesar, remember? Who did Paul appeal to? Who was the Caesar between 54 AD and 68 AD, the time that the Apostle Paul would have been writing to Timothy? And the answer is Nero, that really nice guy who burned Rome down, you know, the great fire of Rome, the guy that was full of debauchery, murdered people. He was infamous in the wrong way. A guy, maybe infamous does mean the wrong way. But he was one of the worst Caesars that ever came along. Nero was not his full name. It was Nero Caesar, .. He was appealing to Nero. And guess what? He was praying for Nero. So do we pray for President Biden? We should be. Do we pray for former President Trump? We should be. Do we pray that we will have peace of mind when God chooses the President of the United States for good or for evil? It can be one way or the other. If God wants to curse a nation, he can do it several different ways. And we don't sit on the sidelines and complain. And we don't have to know all the minutiae, the details of what happens to get a man in office. Do I feel that men become president and there's been some shenanigans going along? And the answer is, yeah. Do we complain about it? No. Why should we complain? Do we go to God's throne and say, you know, you really made a mistake? Do the angels or the elders around God's throne say, you know, what happened? You missed it. Didn't you want this person? Oh, yeah, but I didn't have the power to do it. I just don't have enough control. And this is what we have to think. This is the way we have to think. We don't have to like who's president, but at the same time, we still, and God doesn't like that he has to do it. He would rather bless a nation. Sometimes he has to curse a nation. And I'm not saying that it's the president's fault. The whole nation is at fault. When you have an immoral nation, that is the problem. And the presidents fall along those lines. But we don't speak evil of the president. We honor the president and we pray. So pray for, number one, pray for those in office, those in authority. Exactly what it says here. Make sure you remember that we all remember 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. We have to remember that. And then also, number two, don't complain, okay, pray. Then don't complain. We don't need to complain about it. And definitely do not become addicted to what's going on in the making of a president. Don't become addicted. Don't become, you know, so mesmerized by, politics. Are we going to, is it wrong to watch some of the goings on? Of course not. But it's our state of mind that's most important. Can we be curious about it? Sure, absolutely. Can we wait to hear who won an election? Well, of course. But with the right attitude, we're going to be just watching and seeing things happen and saying, well, look what God is doing, because God is the one that's doing it. So remember in all of this, brethren, what we started off with, basically in the early part, Daniel 4, until we learn that God rules in the kingdom of men.